Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
So, to the violence in Belfast and indeed in Britain. In the north, petrol bombs, heavy masonry and bricks were thrown at police in the second night of riots. The PSNI this morning strongly condemned what it called disgraceful scenes. They say adults in the background have been orchestrating children to participate in disorder. I'm joined now by Belfast-based journalist Amanda Ferguson. And Amanda, the PSNI has just released a statement in the course of the last hour, which is their assessment of what happened overnight. Can you take us through it?
Yes, that's fine. The main violence has been concentrated in Belfast on Saturday and then last night. So police have said that there was a different flavour to the rioting last night, that it seemed to be mainly younger people, that they were concerned that adults were orchestrating violence in the background. And the issue that the statement that they issued had said that the riot and the disorder was mainly taking place in the Donegal Road and Sandy Row areas, that police came under attack, that petrol bombs, masonry, bricks was thrown, that petrol was poured over a police Land Rover and set alight, and that a 15-year-old boy had been arrested on suspicion of riotous behaviour, and he's in police custody this morning. There was then also that horrific incident where a man was set upon, a man aged in his 30s, is in hospital after attackers were stamping on his head. Now, earlier in the day, outside a hotel where misinformation had been circulating online about the nature of the hotel in the city centre, and a few dozen people gathered, some with their faces covered, some holding union flags. There no incidents flowed from that. It was really around 9:30 last night that police started that people started to notice police Land Rover speeding through town to get over to that area of South Belfast. During the violence that took place on the streets in that Sandy Row, Bradbury Place kind of area, two rubber bullets were discharged by police, and one rioter was struck on the hand. Attempts were also made to set fire to a supermarket that had been set fire to the night before. However, officers at the scene were able to extinguish that fire. A number of roads were closed in the area to try and maintain some sort of protection and order, and the police have said that they're working at pace to identify offenders and make arrests, and have encouraged anybody with any information to give it to them.
Amanda, this suggestion from the PSNI that adults in the background have been orchestrating children to participate in the disorder, a tactic very familiar from the bad old days in Northern Ireland, do you think that it'll prove to be the case that the individuals involved would also already be familiar from the bad old days?
It may be that case, but there are some younger people that are engaged with this as well. It's a recurring theme in Northern Ireland that men send children out to engage in street disorder while they kick back and don't have their life chances affected. So, you know, the impact on the young people that are arrested and means it limits their travel opportunities, it limits their job opportunities. People describe it as grooming, as child exploitation, as child abuse in some cases. So it'll be interesting to see if that's a theme if further disorder takes place. But it really is a depressing picture, because what's happening you know, at the weekend, and also what happened last night, is not representative of most people. And I was spending time with some business owners, a catch-all term will say non-white business owners, or there were Muslim business owners who were absolutely terrified by what was happening. A lot of them had to shut their business up earlier in the evening because they were concerned about that planned protest that they'd heard about taking place at the hotel, outside the hotel in the city centre, and they were concerned that what happened on Saturday was going to happen again. However, some of them are still counting the cost to the damage to their businesses and to their properties, and the fact that whenever the sort of fascists and racists that were marauding through the streets had smashed up their windows, that everybody obviously understandably in their restaurants and in their cafes and so on ran. So they lost all that money. They lost all the money at the stock. And some of them don't actually have shutters to pull up and the luxury to be able to go home.
The suggestion has been made by a number of unionist politicians that this violence is being influenced or coordinated by people from outside of the community. Is that something that is contradicted by the names and addresses of those who have been arrested to date?
Not particularly. There seems to be a sort of growing distinction in the response that we're receiving from unionist politicians as opposed to non-unionist politicians. Unionist politicians seem to be mentioning legitimate and genuine concerns, of course, while still condemning violence that takes place. But I think one of the challenges with that is that it can be quite hard to find someone to coherently outline what the challenges or what the genuine concerns are. And also whenever people are you know, referencing housing and referencing other issues, you know, they tend to be looking towards their perhaps their Muslim and non-white neighbours as the reason for that, when that is not factually the case.
What can you tell us about the interaction between what would appear to have been a number of tricolour bearing protesters apparently connected to or affiliated to the Coolock Says No protest in Dublin, turning up and marching alongside, indeed even in front of loyalists at the weekend?
Yes, it was a bit of a surreal experience to see Coolock Says No and Ulster Says No banners appearing alongside each other. I know that the Taoiseach and the Sinn Féin First Minister Michelle O'Neill have spoken about the cross-border element to this, and it's understood and it's been reported in the papers in Belfast that the grouping, the Coolock squad, as they're being described, had been drinking with loyalist paramilitaries and had been engaging with one of the suspects in a atrocity on the Ormer Road. And also that I saw from social media footage last night that whenever the Coolock Says No banner turned up outside Garda HQ in Dublin, that there seemed to be a dispute between the anti-immigration protesters, because they didn't want the Coolock people with them, because they started going on about not knowing their history and about you know, what they've been doing up in Belfast. So I think that's definitely one to keep an eye on. Certainly it is. There was a sense from some of the business owners that I spoke to that said to me that whenever they could hear some of the voices of the people that were shouting at the streets and that were trying to intimidate them, that they had Dublin accents, and also that some of them had English accents as well. So I think that this theme obviously isn't unique to Belfast. It's something that's been unfolding in Britain, and I think that people are obviously just very disturbed that there doesn't seem to be much of an end in sight. And the policing operation within the north, within Northern Ireland, seems to be slightly different from what's happening in Britain. However, the scale is obviously different up to this point. Okay. There's been 5 arrests from the PSNI, but there has been a huge evidence gathering operation underway in recent days, and police and the public expect the number of arrests and people who are going to be prosecuted to increase in the time ahead.
Amanda Ferguson, thank you very much. Henry Riley from LBC joins us now. Henry, the violence around Britain last night, how has it compared to the previous 6 nights?
Well, good morning. It's the fact that it's spread to various other areas is certainly a concern. Previously, we've seen it in sort of our big cities like Manchester and like Liverpool. But yesterday, places that hadn't seen disruption saw that and significant disruption. Places like Darlington, places like Plymouth, which is right down in the sort of Devon area in the south of England. And those were two of the sort of main hotspots last night. We also saw, similar to what Amanda was saying in terms of misinformation, in Birmingham we saw a pretty worrying scene, whilst not much actual violence, in the sense that there was false reports online that there was going to be this sort of big clash between a far-right march that was planning to take place there, as well as other groups who claimed they were there to counter the far-right march. And what you saw was Birmingham, as a city and parts of Birmingham, had people essentially hanging around who were there waiting to counter what they thought would be a far-right march. Now, fortunately, we didn't see too much disruption, certainly compared to some of what we've seen in the past. We know that a pub was attacked, various police officers, and, of course, a police car, which is all extremely worrying. But I think based on the sort of mood music we're getting from officers in Birmingham, they are pleased that it did not escalate to what it could have. And instead, what we saw was journalists who were in the area, one from Sky News, one from LBC, which is where I'm from, who were essentially chased out of parts of Birmingham for which they were reporting. So clearly this is a situation that is spreading and is continuing to worry the police and journalists.
Now, since going into number 10, the Labour government has revealed not just a £22 billion black hole in the finances, but also a chronic shortage of prison spaces. If there are multiple arrests and convictions, is there room for all these people?
The short answer is yes, and you're quite right. This is certainly a live topic for debate in the UK. The state of our prisons has been a topic that has been dominating for months. Indeed, there is a separate report out today suggesting one of our main prisons, Wandsworth Prison, is not fit for purpose. So if you leave that to one side, there is space, but just about. So the government have announced that there will be 500 extra prison places. This was announced by the Justice Secretary just a few days ago. We had the Courts Minister on the broadcast round this morning who said they could be ready to cope with those arrested protesters by next week. So this is clearly moving at pace, the government trying to do all they can. And the other strategy that's been mooted by Number 10, mooted by our Justice Department, is the idea of 24-hour courts. And we saw this with the London riots, again, riots that spread throughout the country back in 2011, where we saw judges sit at weekends and in some cases for 24 hours, sitting through the night. The government saying categorically, these people will be brought to justice and brought to justice quickly. And whether that means judges have to again sit through the nights and have some pretty early mornings, well, that is absolutely a strategy they're willing to deploy. Mm-hmm.
The billionaire with the largest loudhailer in the world, Elon Musk, has said now that civil war is inevitable in the UK. How have the political classes responded to that intervention?
Well, it's really the only thing that's seemingly united everyone, because everyone is being vociferous in their condemnation of Elon Musk and those comments. I mean, look, just to give you the background to this, in the UK, Elon Musk doesn't poll particularly popularly, but of course he was in Downing Street around a year or so ago as part of the then Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's tech strategy. So he is someone who does have links with the UK, and indeed politicians have in some cases tried to court, but his comments have been widely condemned. We've just seen a former commissioner of the Met Police saying that he should quite frankly mind his business. This is Sir Paul Stevenson, who was in post around the time of the London riots in 2011. And in fact, what's interesting then is back in 2011, it came out subsequently, the Met did put in a request to shut down Twitter in the UK because of the impact it was having. Now, given the sort of expansion of what we now call X, that would seem a tall order. But Keir Starmer has essentially said he doesn't know what he's talking about. Heidi Alexander, who is the courts minister I referenced earlier on the broadcast round this morning, had a very clear line that actually Elon Musk, his comments not only dangerous, but actually factually wrong. And of course, senior policing leaders also coming out and saying this idea of civil unrest or two-tier policing, whilst not true, also extremely unhelpful for both politicians and senior police officers alike.
Henry Riley with LBC in London, thank you. And before him, Amanda Ferguson in Northern Ireland.